Wake up, everyone. It's time for the Steve Noble Show, where biblical Christianity meets the everyday issues of life in your home, at work, and even in politics. Steve is an ordinary man who believes in an extraordinary God, and on his show, there's plenty of grace and lots of truth, but no sacred cows. Call Steve now at 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Or check him out online at thestevenobleshow.com. And now, here's your host, Steve Noble.
Okay, let's start with a little experiment. Hey, how are you? How you doing? Nice to see you. TheSteveNobleShow.com is the website. You can get the podcast wherever you get your podcasts. You can join us right here in the studio on Facebook Live, The Steve Noble Show. On Facebook Live. And now, thank you, Seth. Now on YouTube. We're trying to get on as many platforms as we can so we can get bounced from as many platforms as we can get bounced from. And people occasionally ask me that. Steve, you know, when are they going to deplatform you? Well, I mean, I'm just a little fish, so it's going to take them a while to get to me. And but we'll see. Every once in a while, I say things and do things and post things just to try to test the waters. I really haven't had a lot of issues on Facebook. They're going after the big fish. But once you run out of big fish, then you can you have time to go after smaller and smaller fish, right? So we'll see whatever happens. But I just wanted to start off with a little good, clean humor, a little good fun, almost like a snarky Friday. But I'm going to do it today. So Pope Fauci came out, and they were asking him about, because have you seen the double masking people? They'll have like the one kind of mask, then they'll have the other kind of mask underneath it. And you're like, what's poking out there? It's like somebody that, you know, ladies, if your bra strap's showing and you're kind of like, hey, and that stuff's not supposed to be, you know, supposed to be overlapping. I shouldn't see that. Or just, you know, when things are just out of place. So you see people, and I've seen people in their cars with two masks on. I'm like, whoa. Okay, it's a little over the top. So anyway, so he said, well, it's likely that a second mask would help. So me being a Christian, I'm like, well, why stop at a second mask? If you really love your neighbor, I mean, if the Roman centurion says, hey, carry my stuff for a mile, you, of course, would turn around and double down and go, I'll carry it, too. And they ask somebody, ask you for your shirt. You give them your tunic also, and you're willing to lay down your life, the ultimate show of love, lay down your life for your brother, your friend, your neighbor. And so if two is better than one, and is three better than two, and is four better than three, and even if it's a decreasing return on that investment, why wouldn't you do it? So just for the sake of it, here we are in the studio. I just took my headphones off. I'm going to put on, now we're going to do radio just for a couple minutes, and I'm going to try to go down this road and just see how it works out, okay? So, all right, so now I have one mask on. Can you really tell a difference, Seth? Is there much of it? You can't really tell. Okay, there's one. And on Facebook Live, you're going to enjoy this. Okay, there's two. Can you tell a difference? Okay, let's bump it up. I'm going to add four more. And Glenn Beck and Stu were doing this on his show earlier today. I heard it. I didn't see it. So I'm going to go from two to four, okay, which is a total of six. Here we go. There's a good there. Okay, now can you hear me? Is there a difference now, Seth? Is there a significant? Okay, is there a significant difference? I literally have six of those blue on one side, white on the other masks on. And how's that sound out there in radio land and Facebook Live land? And then my friend Andrew on Facebook Live is like, the oxygen is in the corner. Yes, I'm actually getting a little short-winded. Now, I talk a lot generally, but I don't think I'm going to. Yeah.
I don't have enough love in me for that. Sorry, Pope Fauci. Not going to happen. You guys want to double up, you want to mask up, you know, knock yourself out. That's me without a mask.
And that's me with six of them on.
Which just goes to show that I love people more than you guys do. Okay, Kratos, do you feel faint on Facebook Live? Yeah, I started to feel a little lightheaded. Okay, let's deal with the elephant in the room now that I can breathe. And let's talk about the impeachment a little bit, the impending impeachment. Did you see, I did have a little fantasy during the impeachment parade. Did you see that when they're marching the orders from the House over to the Senate, the impeachment parade? And I was like, if they were all in orange jumpsuits, that would have been really enjoyable. Just a big mass perp walk, right? That would have been fun. So let's talk about that. And some interesting things here. I'm going to start with this story, which may seem unrelated to you, but I just want to deal with the facts in the case of the impeachment of Donald Trump. Second impeachment now of a former president. Nancy, just a trailblazer. Here's the title of the piece. Capitol Police apologizes, admits advanced intel showed Congress was a target before the insurrection. Which, by the way, if that was an insurrection, that was the lamest insurrection in the history of insurrections. The lamest insurrection in the history of government, because an insurrection is supposed to be, by definition, and in a court of law, an insurrection is a violent overthrow of a government, the purpose being to take over, right? A violent coup. A coup is just more of a banana republic on the other side of the Atlantic phrase for an insurrection. The insurrection is the actual act itself, which we're going to take over by hook or by crook or by storm or by gun, whatever. We're going to take over the operations of government. But what happened on January 6th was, for the most part, I read this in an article recently, was really more like a 1950s panty raid with a bunch of male college students running through the sorority house. Now, there was some violence, obviously, and several people and another police officer killed himself, which is horrific. That there could be so much pressure on people and all this backlash that they're like, I just don't want to live anymore. That is heartbreaking from a gospel perspective, especially. So I'm not making light of any of that. But if we're going to impeach somebody, you better have an impeachable offense, high crimes and misdemeanors. So if you're inciting, what does the law say about incitement? And if you're inciting an insurrection, what is an insurrection? Okay. So inciting is I'm just saying things, I'm ginning up the crowd, I'm getting them, I'm inciting them, I'm pushing them, I'm enabling them to take an action. In this case, an insurrection. That's why this is an interesting story. Pittman, who is one of the leaders of the Capitol Police, cited problems with manpower, delayed approval to send in National Guardsmen, and radio communications issued on the day of the attack that would need to be addressed going forward. She also admitted the department should have been more prepared for this attack. Why is that? Given intelligence it received by January 4th, indicating that the January 6th event would not be like any of the previous protests held in 2020. Quote, we knew there was a strong potential for violence and that Congress was the target, unquote, Pittman said. Right? Isn't that interesting? In advance, before January 6th, they had intel that there was potential violence and that Congress was the target. So if there's people there planning to attack Congress, try to get in there and have a stupid, whatever you want, a political term you want to use for it. So it's pre-planned and they're running in there to do something they had pre-planned and the Capitol Police knew it. Then how did Donald Trump incite on the late morning of January 6th something that was pre-planned and was going to occur anyway? How did he do that? We'll pick it up there when we come back. Okay, just a test. If your head is not bopping up and down right now, you should see somebody. How about that? I don't know how you hear the Bee Gees from Saturday Night Fever and don't have a reaction. Some kind of just your head up and down, or up and down. Okay, let's get back to the news of the day. It is Steve Noble talking about the impeachment. So. They perp walked it in there, did all that stuff, and now it's coming out that the Capitol Police were aware that there was probably going to be a violent attempt on the Capitol building itself in advance. So that question for me is, well, then how could Trump incite something that was pre-planned? And, of course, the logical answer to that in a court of law would be he can't. An incitement, and I don't believe what happened rises to the legal level of incitement nor the legal level of what an insurrection is, but setting that aside, on Tuesday, yesterday, Senator Rand Paul from Kentucky delivered a blistering speech on the floor of the Senate, in which, if you haven't heard it, go listen to it. It's excellent. About eight minutes, excoriating Democrats for their attempt to impeach former President Donald Trump, who's now a private citizen. Paul not only blasted Democrats for their hyper-partisan actions, but denounced them for hypocritically targeting Trump while saying nothing in the past about various Democrats' incendiary rhetoric. The senator also blasted Democrats for letting a clearly partisan Democrat senator preside over the proceedings. Isn't that interesting, by the way, that John Roberts, normally the chief of the Supreme Court, would preside over an impeachment hearing. But this case, he's like, yeah, no. I want to find out some more about what's going on there. Rand Paul called the impeachment proceedings a kangaroo court, a travesty, and stated of the Democrats, quote, it's almost as if they have no ability to exist except in opposition to Donald Trump, unquote. He noted, quote, Democrats are about to do something no self-respecting senator has ever stooped to. Democrats are insisting the election is actually not over, and so they insist on regurgitating the bitterness of the election, close quote. Paul cited the inflammatory rhetoric of Senator Cory Booker and Congressman Maxine Waters, asserting no Democrat has ever considered impeaching Maxine for her violent rhetoric. In fact, Republicans, to our credit, have never once thought it illegitimate to formally censure or impeach these Democrats, he said. No Republican has sought to use the government to hold these Democrats responsible for Antifa and Black Lives Matter violence that has consumed our cities all summer, resulting in over $1 billion of destruction, looting, and property damage. He also called attention to the behavior of recently inaugurated Vice President Kamala Harris. Should Kamala Harris be impeached for offering to pay for violent people to get out of jail who've been burning down our cities? That was in Minneapolis, he added that part. He goes on to say this, look, we've now got crazy partisans on the other side of the aisle trying to censure and remove two of the Republican senators for their political positions. It was Hawley and Cruz. Now, look, I disagreed. I don't think Congress should ever overturn the Electoral College. But impeaching or censuring or expelling a member of Congress you disagree with? Is the truth so narrow that only you know the truth? We now have the media on your side saying there's only one set of facts, one set of truths, and can only interpret it this way. Now we have seven senators on the other side, talking about Democrats, trying to expel, censure, or impugn two senators on this side. And I defend them, not because I defend their position. I disagreed with their position. But you can't impeach, censure, expel people you disagree with. What's this coming to? What a great question. Okay. So that's Rand Paul. Go listen to it. Just Google it. Rand Paul impeachment comments. You'll find it. Okay. It's all over the place. About 8 minutes. Really good. Which led to this. 45 Republican senators vote against Trump impeachment trial, say it's unconstitutional. Okay. That means five voted for it. Who were they? Well, you can guess the first one. Mitt Romney. Then Ben Sasse, Susan Collins, who's a rhino. At least most of them are rhinos at this point. But Susan Collins from Maine, Lisa Murkowski from Alaska, and Pat Toomey from Pennsylvania voted with the Democrats. Senator James Lankford from Oklahoma issued the following statement after he voted to support Paul's point of order on the constitutionality of the trial of a former president. So Rand Paul was saying, okay, we need to have a vote because I don't even think this is constitutional. And 45 Republicans agreed and said, yeah, this isn't. And 55 others, including five Republicans, said, yeah, it is. Or from my perspective, yeah, we don't care. But here's what James Lankford said. This is not a trial. This is political theater, which it is. This is like kabuki theater, okay? You cannot remove someone from office who's already out of office. In this trial, there is no current president, no chief justice, and no possibility someone could be removed from office because they are not in any office. In a moment when our nation needs to unite, this trial will only create even deeper divisions, which is true because you got 74 million people out there that you're upsetting even more. And forget the 74 million people. Let's be intellectually honest constitutionalists for a second. I don't care if there's 74 million people that are ticked off about it. I don't care if there's 150 million people that are mad about it. What I care about, if you're going to be a proper citizen in the United States of America, is what does the Constitution say? And for presidents in our 240-year history, impeachment's been used for a sitting president because there's concern that they've been guilty of high crimes or misdemeanors, and you want to remove them from office, not come back later. That's like a writ of attainder, which we used to use and the British Crown used to use, where the legislature could just call somebody guilty and punish them without a regular court proceeding. That's what Senator Paul referred to it as. So then there's this. Senators Maul censoring Trump as an alternative to the impeachment trial. That's not going to happen, by the way, because Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer, I mean, just hold on a second. I like to try to be intellectually honest. And when that phrase Trump derangement syndrome first hit the airwaves, I was like, okay, maybe that's a little over the top, hyperbole. Then as time went by, you know, Rashida Tlaib talking about we're going to impeach him, right when he won, it's November of 2016, we're going to impeach them, which I can't say. And then they just, you know, it's all about Trump. This last election, you think you had 74 million Trump voters and 80 million Biden voters? You didn't. You had 150 million Trump voters, either for or against. I don't think there was hardly anybody that was actually excited and voting for Joe Biden. They were voting against Donald Trump. So, and then the Trump derangement syndrome, to be intellectually honest, also exists on the right side of the aisle. There are people that will go to the bottom of the ocean with Donald Trump who refuse to will make excuses for behavior, how he treats people, what he says. He can do no wrong. It's like he walks on water. He's Cyrus. He's this. He's the other thing. And they're just it just reeks to me of idolatry. So I've been saying for a while, there's Trump derangement syndrome on both sides of the aisle, but primarily on the left. And when you are controlled by your anger, right, in your anger, do not sin, the Bible says. So tons of people say righteous indignation. And I go, yeah. I agree. And and there are times for righteous indignation, but you better make sure your indignation is righteous, which means you can hold it up before the Lord. And he goes, yeah, I'm with you. I'm with you there. Yep. And as a matter of fact, it would be a sin for you not to be angry about that. Like legal abortion. I have righteous indignation about legal abortion. And I should. And you should. And I guarantee you God does. Okay? We're not talking about the person. We're talking about the act. And so there's that righteous indignation. But the left, and especially Schumer and Pelosi, have proven time and time again. I mean, they are totally obsessed, idolatry, of Donald Trump. There's people that have an idolatry problem on the right, and there's a whole lot of people that have an idolatry problem on the left. And I think, quite frankly, if they could throw him in jail for 20 years, they would. I think they are so consumed. Now, they call themselves Christians, at least Pelosi does. And if you call yourself a Christian, but you refuse to be forgiving towards people, that's a contradiction in terms. Yeah, hey, Steve, do you mean we shouldn't invest in the justice system? No, I'm not talking about that at all. You can be found guilty but still be forgiven. There's no way they would be willing to forgive Donald Trump for anything. So the whole thing's kabuki theater. They're hitting him because they can. It's like a parent when we punish our kids just because we can to show them who's boss, even if they didn't deserve it. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show. Have you been asking yourself, or have you been feeling some frustration about, if you're a conservative, you're like, man, I mean, the whole country's going to heck in a handbag, and what can I do about it? I feel so powerless. There's nothing I can do. Well, I'm going to start pushing all of us. I had a conversation earlier today, Joe Markowitz was on the show several weeks ago. He started a company called Defender Gear, very successful businessman, loves the Lord, is a patriot. He also does Liberty Dispatch, and he's going to come on the show in a couple of weeks. And we were talking about what to do, and as we look at what's happening here in America and around the world, and he's talking about progressivism and socialism, and I told him about the show I did yesterday on the Great Reset. And if you don't know much about the Great Reset, go look it up, World Economic Forum, spend some time on there, or just listen to the show or watch the Facebook Live from yesterday, thestevenobleshow.com, wherever you get your podcasts, or on the Facebook page, The Steve Noble Show. And you start to get a primer. I threw a lot at you yesterday, a ton of information, just to kind of wake you up to what's going on. So we were talking about that. And then later on in the conversation, I was like, you know what? Here, everybody's frustrated. So many people are frustrated. Like, what can we do? We're losing our country, blah, blah, blah. And all of a sudden, I just said, you know what? I think America needs to be much smaller. You need to engage with your America, meaning your part of America, which means here's what God's going to hold you mostly responsible for and accountable for, okay? The Catholic Church does a great teaching on this in the ethical realm. It's called moral proximity. God's going to hold you a lot more accountable for the things closer to you than the things far away or the things that you really don't have a whole lot of ability to impact. So I think all of us, our America should be much smaller. Your America needs to be a whole lot smaller because you're looking at the whole country from sea to shining sea, from Canada to Mexico and everything, the federal government, all this stuff. And there ain't a whole lot you can do about that, friend. And I understand the feeling of powerlessness, and you care and you're concerned, and God bless you for it. That's great. So I want you to start thinking about, and I'm gonna end the show today with a couple of stories that are just kind of North Carolina centric and even right around here about the school system, things going on in the school system. So I want you to think of your America, meaning the part that's much smaller, much closer to you, your relationship with your spouse, your relationship with your kids, your interaction with your neighbors, your coworkers, stuff like that. Okay? That's what I want you to work on. Are we still live on Facebook, by the way? Okay? That's just my computer. That's what I want you to start thinking about. Where do I engage? How do I make a difference? I feel so frustrated. I got to do something. It's all just falling apart, right? So I want you to start shrinking America. for yourself. It's just like Nehemiah on the wall. He doesn't look at you. Nehemiah didn't show up at your house and say, okay, we get see this whole thing, this whole pile of rubble around the city of David, and see all this stuff around here? You go fix that. That's not what he did. He surveyed everything. He had a broken heart about it. And then he got the people to fix the part of the wall where they lived. Local. And you can still make a difference, and that matters. You probably can't save America all on your own, and I don't know that God calls you to save America. I was more interested in seeing Americans saved, brought into the family of faith. But you'd love your neighbor as yourself. Think more locally, okay? Shrink America to your America. You're part of it. You're part of the wall, okay? I'm going to start unpacking that more in the days to come. And I hope that's a blessing, and I hope it makes sense. Okay, so I'm going to get to that. Just a little teaser. All right, let's go back to this. Tulsi Gabbard. Got to play this clip. Tulsi Gabbard, Democrat, was in the House. Hawaii, I think she is I think she's a vet. I think she served in the military. And she's sounding more and more like a conservative. It's really good. And she was talking about domestic enemies. Tulsi Gabbard warns Brennan, Schiff, big tech oligarchs, greater threat to U.S. than Capitol rioters. Former Representative Tulsi Gabbard from Ohio claimed Tuesday that former CIA Director John Brennan, Representative Adam Schiff, and the oligarchs of Silicon Valley pose an even greater threat to American liberty than the rioters who stormed the Capitol earlier this month. This is a Democrat, okay? This is awesome. I'll let her speak for herself. Let's run the Tulsi Gabbard. This isn't very long, like a minute and a half.
The mob that stormed the Capitol on January 6th to try to stop Congress from carrying out its constitutional responsibilities were behaving like domestic enemies of our country. But let's be clear. The John Brennans, Adam Schiffs, and the oligarchs in big tech who are trying to undermine our constitutionally protected rights and turn our country into a police state with KGB-style surveillance are also domestic enemies and much more powerful and therefore dangerous than the mob that stormed the Capitol. Now, John Brennan said,
"So I know looking forward that the members of the Biden team who have been nominated or have been appointed are now moving in laser-like fashion to try to uncover as much as they can about what looks very similar to insurgency movements that we've seen overseas, mm-hmm. where they germinate in different parts of a country and they gain strength and it brings together an unholy alliance frequently of religious extremists, authoritarians, fascists, bigots, racists, nativists, even libertarians."
Now, President Biden, I call upon you and all members of Congress from both parties to denounce these efforts by the likes of Brennan and others to take away our civil liberties that are endowed to us by our Creator and guaranteed in our Constitution. If you don't stand up to these people now, then our country will be in great peril.
Okay, Tulsi Gabbard, formerly in the House, Democrat. And why do you like what she's saying? Assuming you do. Why? Because she's thinking, she's just being logical. That's all she's doing. She has intellectual honesty, and she's willing to call a spade, okay? She's not thinking primarily politically. She's not thinking from a political bias. She's just looking at the facts. She's calling the facts as they are. That's called the truth. That's how you do that. And that's why every once in a while, if you have a hard allegiance to the truth, every once in a while, people in your own camp are going to be like, "What? What's your problem?" Sorry, my allegiance isn't to my partisanship; it is to the truth itself, which can be known. Okay. She also blasted a recent bill from Schiff, ostensibly intended to curb domestic terrorism, during a recent interview with Fox. She predicted where such legislation would go. "Quote: What characteristics are we looking for as we are building this profile of a potential extremist? What are we talking about? Religious extremists? Are we talking about Christians, evangelical Christians? What's a religious extremist? Is it somebody who's pro-life? Where do you take this?" she said. Gabbard has not shied away from criticizing her own party on issues ranging from abortion to biological men competing on women's sports. She most recently blasted House Democrats for removing gendered language from the House rules. She was talking to Tucker Carlson, right? When Carlson asked her how removing gendered language empowers women, Gabbard responded, "It absolutely does the very opposite of that, and it's the height of hypocrisy for people who claim to be the champions of rights for women to deny the very biological existence of women. And this recent rule change that the House just actually voted and passed on today that you were talking about, removing references to, you know, mothers and fathers, brothers and sisters, sons and daughters from congressional rules and administration, it's mind-blowing. Because it shows just how out of touch with reality and the struggles of everyday Americans people in Congress are. And then, of course, Biden, who's done over 30 executive orders now, setting up all time, I mean, record numbers. Okay. Trump, not even close. Bush didn't even do one in his first 5 days, 6 days, 7 days. Obama only did a couple. Biden's already done over 30. Coming out and saying, yeah. The whole, any outie, male, female, female, male. And if you're a guy and you think you're a girl, you want to be on the girls' basketball team, knock yourself out. Doesn't matter that you're a 6 foot, 4 inch male that weighs 220 pounds. If you say you're a woman, you're a woman. So join the women's team. You feel like you're a woman, then go use their locker room. No problem. I'm down with that. So says the United States president. And Tulsi Gabbard going, no, that's insane. And it is. Do you know what the do you feel like the world's going crazy? Is it going crazy? What's the definition of crazy or insane? It's being out of touch with reality. What is reality? Reality is that which is true. Well, what's true? Well, now you sound like Pontius Pilate, right? That's how we got here. Speaking of censorship, this is funny or not. Twitter announces Birdwatch. Birds aren't real, by the way. Twitter announces Birdwatch, a community-based tool to fight misinformation. What could possibly go wrong with that, right? This is from a Daily Wire article yesterday. Keith Coleman, Twitter's vice president of product, announced that the social media giant would be launching a community-based approach to misinformation. Community-based, that's like Wikipedia, right? You can go in and edit stuff on Wikipedia. Dubbed Birdwatch, gives me great comfort. The product will pilot in the United States, of course, and will allow people to identify information in tweets they believe is misleading and write notes that provide informative context. Isn't that the point of just replying to a tweet or replying to a Facebook post or an Instagram post? Isn't that the point, to have a dialogue? It's not the point at Twitter. We believe this approach, he said, has the potential to respond quickly when misleading information spreads, adding context that people trust and find valuable. What? This is insane. Eventually, we aim to make notes visible directly on tweets for the global Twitter audience when there is consensus from a broad and diverse set of contributors. Broad and diverse. I wonder, is that like some are 4 foot five, some are 5 foot two, some are 6 foot three, some are male, some are female, some are gendered, some are cisgendered, some are asexual, bisexual, transsexual. What do they mean by that? You want to know who's not going to be on there? People like me and people like you. So a broad and diverse set of contributors, that's Twitter announcing Birdwatch as if it's a great thing. Well, it's a great thing for their worldview as they continue to clamp down on anything outside of it. Censorship to the max. We'll be right back. Hey, remember that, by the way, for my Christian friends. And when I say my Christian friends, I mean, like, real Christian friends. Christian. Steve, what are you talking about? I'm a Christian. Really? I mean, here's an interesting thing to do, especially if you get Uber or something. I do this when I used to travel more on Uber, and then we're going to get into some local issues because they really want to push us all to make America much smaller for all of us. Oh, by the way, this is me with 6 masks on. It's me loving my neighbor. This is me without them. And so get in the Uber, and then somebody there from Zimbabwe or whatever, okay? And then I talk to them, and I've got 2 minutes, 5 minutes, 10 minutes. I mean, Zimbabwe, beautiful. How long have you been over here? Why'd you come over here? Do you have family here? All right, great. Hey, did you, were you part of a religion back in Zimbabwe? Oh, yeah, yes, I went to church. I'm a Christian. And now it's a tough question, okay? This gets a little awkward. You go, okay, awesome. Do you mind if I ask you kind of a strange question? Why do you consider yourself a Christian? Okay, that's the question that hopefully if you have a somewhat of a different relationship, or even in this case, you got a 10-minute relationship, I try to ask it gently and I tell them, hey, do you mind if I ask you? It's kind of an awkward question. I don't mean to offend you. I just want to clarify something. Yeah, go ahead. I mean, you're the customer in most cases. So usually they're willing to talk. They have a lot of customers that don't say anything. So, well, why do you call yourself a Christian? And I remember several conversations that went as follows. Well, you know, I believe in God, and I try to read the Bible when I can, and I try to go to church when I can. And they stop. That's their answer. And I go, well, okay, so you believe in God. You read the Bible sometimes. You go to church sometimes. Did you know that actually isn't what the Bible says makes somebody a Christian? Did you know that? And now they're kind of, what? They're either offended or now they're wondering. Well, what do you mean? I go, well, let me ask you this. Have you ever heard the phrase born again? Have you ever heard that? Born again? Born again Christian or just being born again? No. Literally, I've had a bunch of conversations like this. And so they're going, okay, John chapter 3, Nick at night, you must be born again. And they sometimes go to church and they sometimes read the Bible and they call themselves a Christian, but they don't want know what it means to be born again. If you call yourself a Christian, point blank, friend, and you don't know what it means to be born again, odds are really good that you're not a Christian. Because Jesus said, you must be born again. So when I throw that out there, hey, to all my Christian friends, I'm talking to you if you've been born again and you know what that means. And you're like, yep, I have. But if you don't know what that means, right now, all I'm going to do, I'm going to punt on that just for a second. And I'm going to tell you, go to my website. This is some cheap plug. I'm not asking you to buy anything. Go to my website, thestevenobleshow.com. And in the links up top and down at the bottom, you'll find one that just says heaven. And go there in very straightforward language with things from the Bible and a really helpful short video, you'll understand what it means to be born again. Okay? All right, let's go local. Let's make America a whole lot smaller. I'm here in Raleigh, North Carolina. Mark Robinson, firebrand, just became our new lieutenant governor, first African American lieutenant governor. That's awesome. This was in the North State Journal. A vote on controversial changes to North Carolina's social studies standards by the State Board of Education has been scheduled for the same time that the state Senate is set to convene, creating a conflict for Lieutenant Governor Mark Robinson, who presides over the Senate and is a voting member of the board. Quote, our office tried to coordinate with the state board to find a time that was agreeable, but we're stonewalled, Robinson told the news source. I'm extremely disappointed that the board knowingly scheduled a meeting that prevents me from being able to carry out the duties that the people in North Carolina elected me to do. Why would they do such a thing? You might ask. I hope you do. The board will be voting on new social studies standards for the state's public schools. Oh, what's the big deal? Social studies. One of the things I want to examine the most is the curriculum, he said. I've been hearing a lot of chatter from folks about a lot of the things that the Department of Public Instruction is trying to put into the curriculum. And some of the stuff is not settling well with me. The changes in the standards include social and racial justice themes such as gender identity and systemic racism, critical race theory, a perspective that's caused controversy in schools across the country. It's found in the 8th grade standards on U.S. and North Carolina history. And in other grade levels, the board's principal advisor, Matt Bristow-Smith, calls the changes the hard truths of our American narrative. Back again to whose truth? This is just, let's give people the facts. And so I was going to run with that story by itself. And then Mark Robinson just put this out. This just came out for immediate release. As a member of the State Board of Education, I've been a part of the meetings concerning new standards for our public school system in North Carolina. These standards are the foundation for education in our state, and as such, are incredibly important. They exist for every grade and every course subject within the state. Such standards should be drafted without an underlying agenda and without political motivations. I agree. As I've said many times, he goes on, we need to teach our children how to think and not what to think. Unfortunately, the standards as they are currently written do not accomplish this goal. Instead, they've been crafted by those on the radical left with an explicit agenda of being divisive, promoting left-wing ideology, and indoctrinating our students with public schools. Now, if you sit there and go, that's just a bunch of hyperbole, then you don't understand. You haven't read enough. You haven't studied enough. Okay? Because that's exactly what's going out there. One such standard he put on this release can be found in the objectives of the founding principles of the United States of America, North Carolina, civic literacy. The CLB-1 standard states, explain how individual values and societal norms contribute to institutional discrimination and the marginalization of minority groups groups living under the American system of government. The message here is clear, he writes. America is a racist nation with systems in place designed to discriminate against minority groups. The implication? That you should hate our great nation. Unfortunately, this example is not an outlier, but instead reflects the broader sentiment that is pervasive throughout the standards from first grade through high school. So he's just coming out publicly to say, hey, there's all kinds of stuff going on here that's garbage that I'm concerned with. And you guys schedule a conversation and a vote on it when I can't be there. I wonder why that is. Well, now you know. Which takes me to this story. Make your America smaller. People say make America great again. I'm saying to you, make America small again, meaning your America, your family, your neighborhood, your workplace, your sphere of influence, your city, your zip code, your county. Shrink your America to where you can engage and really make a difference. Because quite frankly, most of us can't make a difference in D.C. Okay? So there's this. From our friend Sloan Rackmuth, she was on the show just recently, Education First Alliance. Great investigative reporter, great conservative, God-fearing. The Tar Heel State's largest teachers association is led by a high school history teacher called Brian Prophet. Sounds normal, except Prophet is a revolutionary communist working for the Chinese-affiliated group Liberation Road. What? Does that sound like hyperbole? Keep listening. Formed in 1970, the North Carolina Association of Educators, NCAE, claimed to be the one voice of educators, but the group also represents school employees, bus drivers, etc. 29,000 members and rakes in about $8.3 million a year. In April of 2020, Prophet and Tamika Walker Kelly were elected by NCAE members to lead the group. Walker's affiliation with the Marxist Black Lives Matter movement was explored in an article last week. We talked to Sloan about this a couple of months ago. It was in the Federalist, I think. But more serious is Prophet's close and ongoing membership in the controversial group Liberation Road. Liberation Road's unity statement requires its members to follow the teachings of Mao Zedong, leader of China's failed cultural revolution called the Great Leap Forward. From 1958 to 1962, Mao's policy killed up to 45 million people. As for Liberation Road, they are serious about overturning America's democracy, warning they will, quote, use any means necessary to bring about socialism anywhere in the country. And this is one of the two leaders at the NCAE, North Carolina Association of Educators. In a recent Epoch Times report titled How and Why Pro-China Communities Took Over Durham, North Carolina, Brian Prophet was pinpointed as the leader of Liberation Road's campaign to infiltrate state institutions. The group targeted the South reportedly because of its high concentration of blacks and Hispanics, which, coupled with a history of racial polarization, makes fertile ground for revolution. So senior is Prophet in the communist movement that he creates the white papers used to teach budding revolutionaries methods to steer communities towards Marxism. This is one of his papers, struggled paper, that he wrote for Liberation Road. Here's what he says. Build a common project or campaign with folks who are in social movement organizations, community organizations, unions, schools, and revolutionary organizations. Base the project on local investigation of issues that folks can develop and work on together. We need more base building, more mass movement. That's how we create space for people to change their own realities. Revolutionaries together have a big role to play here. Doing this kind of work with those that we haven't before will help to build trust and lasting political relationships that can take us to a higher level of struggle. Charming. Prophet has followed his own instructions to a great success. As a result, Liberation Road now controls North Carolina's teachers union, NCAE. They use it for a vehicle to recruit aspiring revolutionaries while at the same time maintain an outsized influence in policymaking in the state's public schools, making indoctrinating children a breeze. There's nothing subtle about Prophet's brand of communism. Quote, this is Prophet, okay, the head of the NCAE now. Quote, I'm a revolutionary because I think that capitalism has to go. We can't make a nicer, more diverse society without eliminating white supremacy. We're not going to end violence against women until we end a system called patriarchy that says that men are more valuable than women and that there are only two boxes of genders and that everybody has to fit into one or the other. We're not going to reform that. To build a revolutionary party, we're going to have to reform a lot of that stuff along the way. Prophet sums up America's problems this way, quote, white supremacy, capitalism, and heterosexism as being the real sources of violence, unquote. It is here in these comments made in a 2008 interview with a UNC historian that we understand the basis for the extreme rhetoric coming from Prophet and his fellow NCAE comrades. This is the guy who's the head of the teachers union in North Carolina. And the Robin to his Batman is a big BLM Inc. person. And BLM, the organization, is clearly avowed Marxist, anti-family, anti-father in the home, pro-transgenderism, pro-homosexuality. And they're largely shaping the North Carolina Association of Educators. Make your America smaller. Get to know your school board. Get involved locally. That's your part of the wall. This is Steve Noble on the Steve Noble Show. God willing, we'll talk again real soon. And like my dad always used to say, ever forward.